What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Fantastic show for you today. Not one, not two. I sound like LeBron James. Not three. Actually three. Three, though. Three Hall of Famers, all of them part of the NBA's 75th anniversary team. They are Bob Pettit, an 11-time All-Star and two-time MVP and NBA champion in 1958 with the St. Louis Hawks, followed by Elvin Hayes, a 12-time All-Star and NBA champion in 1978 with the Washington Bullets, and lastly, Rick Barry, a 12-time All-Star and NBA champion in 1975 with the Golden State Warriors. Rick, in particular, as always, had a lot to say, but a lot of fun stuff, too, with Mr. Hayes and Mr. Pettit. Had the honor and the pleasure of sitting down with all three of these gentlemen during All-Star Weekend in Cleveland. Many thanks to the National Basketball Retired Players Association, also known as the Legends, for setting us up. Shout out to PR ace Julio Mantega, does a great job over there. Next week's Friday crossover, by the way, will also feature a legend and member of that 75th anniversary team, but that's a more extended conversation. I'm just going to leave that as a teaser. Won't tell you who yet, but you do not want to miss that one either. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the crossover wherever you get your podcasts, and hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my chats with three of the greatest players in NBA history are coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by an 11-time All-Star, two-time MVP, member of the 75th anniversary team, Bob Pettit. Bob, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here. Beautiful
day in Cleveland.
If I don't step outside.
We are inside. We are safe from the ice and snow. When you come back to an event like this, when you get a chance to be immersed in today's NBA again, what strikes you? What about today's NBA strikes you the most?
Well, number one, I think, the difference, there's so many differences. What strikes me is number one is, watching these players are so great today. I mean, we had great players, and I think the players that we had back in the 50s and 60s, they could play any. Some guys like Oscar and Elgin Baylor and Jerry West and Bill Russell and Wilt, those guys could play anytime, anywhere. But there were only eight teams in the league when I played. Today they're 30-something NBA teams, and the talent is so incredible. The three-point shot, I think, has added a lot to the game. The fans seem to love it, and they get all excited about it, and it's different. And the main thing, too, one of the main things is the media coverage. When you look here, we played back in our first All-Star game was 1955, I think, in New York, as I recall, and you might have one interview and one sports writer there that wanted to talk to you, but basically, it's so different today, and it's so important today to the psyche, if that's the right word, of the American people. They love professional basketball. They love the NBA. They love these great players, and they become like folk heroes to these young men and old men. And the fact that some of the ladies really enjoy them. So there's a whole different atmosphere today, and now, I enjoy coming back, and occasionally, like this weekend, I'll have a chance to visit with some of the guys that I played with and against. And they're not many that are still living. Most of them. I was one of the ambassadors selected for a particular era of time, and I think the main thing was I'm still alive. A lot of the players that could play in that era unfortunately didn't make it, but it's a great time to come, a great time to see all these great players and to attend in different functions. And I'm excited, and I'm excited to bring my wife, who comes, my son and grandson, and we have a great time, and I look forward to it, and I'm all excited about it.
It was such a big man dominant league back in your day, and for most of the history of the game, it was really about the guys in the paint and the guys who could score from close range. And it is such a more diverse game because there's still bigs who are dominant, but there are, because as you point out, the 3-point shot is so prominent. Do you like that change that has shifted, that it has shifted toward the outside? Did you ever worry that the big man was going to become less relevant in the game because of the 3-point prominence?
I didn't worry about anything, in those days. I was happy to be here. I was a kid, barely 21 years old when I joined the league. I was drafted by the Milwaukee Hawks. Never heard of them when I came out of college. I was not familiar with all the teams in the NBA. So, it was a... It was a different world, and I loved it, and I've enjoyed it. So I can't say enough great things about the NBA today.
You were one of the all-time great rebounders. I jotted down a couple things here. You averaged 16 rebounds a game for your career over 11 seasons. Your per game average, 16.2 per game, is still the third all-time. Including 20 rebounds per game in the 60-61 season. Those numbers sound mind-boggling to me now. Is rebounding just not as much of an art today? Is it just the game is just played differently? What made you such a dominant rebounder?
Well, I think rebounding is nothing but hard work. And, you watch a game today, and many of the big players don't go to the basket to follow the shots. In my case, it was 5 or 6 points a game hanging on the offensive board. So I went after them, and I can honestly say that rebounding was the most important thing in my game, I thought. Did I score? Yes. I averaged, you said, 26 points a game for 11 years, 26 plus. But the thing I looked at and was most conscious of was my rebounding. And I lived in the era with the two greatest rebounders in history, and Wilt and Big Bill Russell. Yeah. And they averaged 22 rebounds a game. And here my little 16.2 or 3 or 4 rebounds is pales in comparison. But I was proud of it. And as you say, I think I'm probably the third leading rebounder in history as far as rebounds per game.
Yeah.
So I don't think that... rebounding is simply wanting it more than anything in the world. You get in there and you go every single time. You don't go once out of twice, once out of three times to the board. I went every single time to get the offensive rebound or get the defensive rebound. So it's just hard work, and you have to really, I think it's a state of mind. You really have to, I'd look up, and I played with players, and I'd get the ball off the backboard and turn around, and my other rebounder was down at the other end waiting for me to throw it to him so he could get a layup. I never did that. I went every single time and got every rebound, and I was proud of it.
Very rare to get to talk to somebody who actually battled with Wilt and Bill Russell. So tell me what that was like, just going up against these giants of the game.
Well, number one, you better be aware of where Bill Russell was at all times, because he would, without question, was the shot blocker, and he dominated on the defensive end. And I don't think people today, the players today or the fans today, realize how important that shot blocking was and the rebound. Wilt, you sit in your locker room and say, okay, you're going over the other team. Okay, you got Wilt. He's going to get 50. You know that. Now, we got to stop Arizon. We got to stop Al Greer, Tommy Gola. We got to do a better job on his teammates to hold them down, because, you're not going to hold Wilt down under 50 if you could. He's going to get that. So, it was incredible playing against him. I defy you to find me two better centers in the history of the NBA. Are there other great big men? Sure, Kareem and Shaquille and some of those big, great players, but Bill Russell and Wilt were in a class by themselves. They were incredible.
How did you prepare for a game like that?
Well, you thought about it, is what you did. You sat down before the game. That's what I did. I promoted myself. My coach, some of the coaches were able to motivate you, and some I wouldn't want to listen to because they didn't motivate very well. They deflate you. So, I got myself prepared. I sat down and who am I playing tonight? I played against him 50 times. How am I going to stop him on defense? What do I keep him doing? Don't let him get to the baseline, play in his face, what have you. And on the other end, on offense, I'd think, I've got to be awful careful driving to the basket because if Wilt is there, Bill Russell's going to be there. If Wilt is there, then you better do something different. You better be prepared for it. You might go to the other side of the basket, use the basket as protection for your ball. You might go up and kind of jump into them a little bit, and that way if you bump them or something, make contact with them, couldn't jump as high, couldn't be as. So you tried all kind of things, and you hoped you found something to stop them, but, really hard to do to stop those guys.
Last one. There's been kind of a big man renaissance those last few years with Nikola Jokic, who, of course, won MVP last season. Joel Embiid and Jokic are now, maybe 1-2 in the MVP race now. What do you think of the dominant centers of today and what they've been able to do?
Well, as you said, it seems to have gone into being more of a guard-orientated offense, outside the three-point shot and the guards driving to the basket and taking it. The centers, they still have to rebound. They desperately need them for rebounding, but you have to, try to get them involved in the thing. And I don't think you have many centers today that are averaging 25 points a game. I maybe I'm wrong.
A couple of them, but yeah.
The big men.
Yeah, Embiid and Jokic are the only ones probably even in that vicinity. So.
Well. And you also had they're very important at rebounding. But there was I don't want to say it's a guard-dominated league today, but the guards, the scoring is much more from the outside than it is in the inside today, to me.
Yeah. But you enjoy it yourself as well, so.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
All right. Bob, appreciate the time. Thank you so much. I'll get you out of here. You got a few more of these to go, so.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Now, very pleased to be joined by a 12-time All-Star, 6-time All-NBA, and NBA champion in 1978 with the Bullets, Elvin Hayes. Mr. Hayes, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Great to be here with you.
Tell me about what All-Star Weekend means to you now and in this environment with where the game is today and getting to see folks. What do you look forward to on a weekend like this?
Well, I think it's very important to get to see some of the young players. I know on the first year, the dunk contest, I was in it. Now, I would love to see the new players coming and dunking the basketball. But also, I'm really excited about the game because I know that Steph Curry is going to be really bringing it. And I think so many of these guys are really playing great now. And it's going to really give me a great feeling to be able to watch these guys, to be able to, for them to put on a show for everyone. So it's going to be really exciting.
The dunk contest kind of seems to ebb and flow from year to year. There have been years where we think, my gosh, I've never seen anything like it. There are years where we think, all right, this thing's over. Everything's already been done.
Yeah.
How do you feel about where it stands now?
Well, I tell you, I watch some of the Rocket players, and I tell you, I have never seen guys jump as high. This game have really just taken off because these guys putting their head on the rim every night, and I'm just talking about one team that I go and watch every night. And then I watch them play teams every night that are just, these guys are just super.
Yeah. Ja Morant, you watch a little of him?
Yeah.
Can you believe how high he is? You said head at the rim. I think his entire chin's above the rim.
That's what I know. It's just really amazing when you see these guys out there dunking the basketball. It's like almost intimidating to say, can anybody beat these guys? So it's really amazing.
Your day in the NBA was really about the big men
dominating
the paint.
That's true.
The game has obviously evolved quite a bit.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're still watching quite a bit. What do you What do you think of where the game is now?
Well, I really feel that the game have really elevated itself in a way for offensive-minded players. They have tried to take the big man out of the game, but I feel that there's always a place for the big man. I think that for a team to be able to have a big man in the center and also a power forward, I think that's where you build your team. Then you can go with your smaller players, that small forward, guards. It's still there, but I don't think you can just totally wash away the big guy, because the big guys are part of the game and always will be a part of the game.
There was a long period of time where we thought, okay, the big men are still important. They rebound, they defend, but the dominant scorer types, the Shaquilles and Akeems, and kind of faded away, and the center position kind of lost some of the glamour, but we now have Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic.
That's right.
I assume that you're very heartened to see this resurgence.
Well, I am, because you really can't get rid of the big guy, because the big guy is a part of the basketball game. It was when it was first built around him. I think George Mikan just was proved to be a super big man. Bob Pettit, all of these guys, they really proved to be super big guys. Bill Russell, it's like night and day, the game of basketball now versus these guys. And I just think that these guys are just tremendous players, but I think there's a place for the big man right now to come back and play.
Embiid and Jokic can dominate and dominate inside.
Yes.
But they both can stroke it too. Like these guys, they shoot threes in a way.
Threes in a minute. Yeah.
What do you think of that aspect of a big man, like the 6'11", 7'7", one guy out there at the 3-point line?
Yeah. But you know what? I was thinking, I was telling a guy, I said, you know one thing? That big guy is going to really change the game, because he's shooting threes, he's stepping in, he's going out. He is just a really dominant player.
You're talking about Jokic.
Yeah. Jokic, he's really a dominant player.
Doesn't bother you as an old school guy seeing men shooting threes?
No, it makes me feel good because I couldn't shoot them.
The three had come in before you retired, right? How many threes in your career?
I shot one.
Did you make it?
No.
Was it an actual three, or was it like a heave at the buzzer?
It was actually a three, and that's why I think that it was good that they didn't have me take too many.
I've heard Jokic referred to as the best passing big of all time. Now, you know, obviously, Bill Walton, Sabonis, there have been some other great passing bigs. Yeah. What do you think?
I don't think so. No. I think that it's very difficult to judge a player like Jokic. But, you know, Bill Walton, he was a tremendous passer. He was great at passing the basketball. And it's one of those things that you can try to compare a basketball player, but you can't. Because players, you can't put them out on the floor with each other and say, okay, let me see you pass now. Okay, let me see you pass. You can't do that. It's always a situation where there will be doubt. It's like Oscar. It's like saying, Oscar can really do all of this and all of that, but then again, you say Steph Curry can really do all of this and all of that, but he's still Steph Curry, and Oscar is still Oscar.
Last thing before I let you go here, the NBA 75 list was such a wonderful rollout by the NBA back in the fall. Who'd we miss? Who? Anybody that you would have liked to see on there who did not make it?
No, I think that they did a great job of bringing in players, which I felt that the 50 greatest they had, and then bringing in 25 more was really exciting and very good. And I really don't think they really missed anybody.
Yeah. No, there's always a few who you can consider.
Oh, yeah, you can always.
It's a solid list.
Yeah, you can always say, wow, that guy should have been there. That guy shouldn't have been there. But I think that the way it is, I think it worked out really well.
Well, this has been a pleasure. Elvin Hayes, thank you so much for spending the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, very pleased to be joined by another NBA legend, Rick Barry. Rick, welcome. Thank you for taking some time.
Sure.
How is the... we're early in the weekend so far, as we tape, but how's the weekend so far for you?
It was great. I got to play pickleball this morning.
Pickleball? Against who?
I went out to a club that something was set up. So I got a chance to play a little bit over there. Mark Terminé, who used to be with Clutch Sports, is retired and all doing some stuff. He lives here, and he likes pickleball. And so we talked about getting a chance to go play some pickleball. So I got to do that.
Nice.
And with my wife, and had some fun, get some exercise. And now they got me doing the interview circuit.
How are your pickleball skills?
I'm actually very good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've won a bunch of national and world senior championships playing in doubles and mixed doubles. And I just love the fact that it's something else I can use and get out and compete. That's the thing. When I retired, I missed competing and missed playing basketball. I knew I couldn't play basketball, but I wanted to be able to compete. And so I found long driving in golf. I won a bunch of world long driving championships in my age division until they stopped that and got rid of the old farts. And then I found pickleball. And so I've been playing pickleball now. And like anything I do, I always try to be as good as I can be. And my goal was to win some national titles. And I won not only that, but the world seniors as well. And so I'm very proud of that. And thanks to my partners, because I wouldn't have won without good partners.
I find this is a common thread, especially among like the greats of the game. I'm sure everybody who competes at the level of the NBA, there's a similarity here, but especially those of you who were at the peak of the peak, that the competitive drive thing never really goes away. Like it's really interesting to me that obviously this is something that you need to channel it somewhere.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak for the other guys. I mean, I do know some of the other guys. I don't think the competitive drive is there, because when I look at them, they've got a few extra pounds and stuff, so I don't know how competitive they're going to be. But that's everybody's in a different individual, so I can only do what's right for me. I don't worry about what the other people do. I just think that if you're a world-class athlete during the prime of your life, why in the world would you allow yourself not to stay in good condition and be active and do a lot of other fun stuff and stay competitive?
Are you that way in everything?
Everything?
I mean, if you're playing cards, everything?
My wife says, honey, we're going to go play this little social thing. I said, I don't do social. not when it comes to competition.
Yeah.
I can be social and sit down, talk, have a good conversation like we're having here. But if you're going to go out and do something in the world of sports that's a competitive sport, I'm going to go out to win. I'm not going to go out there to be nice. I'm going to win. I mean, what the hell? What else do you play for? I mean, you should be playing. If you're playing something, you should be playing to win and giving your best effort. So that's what I do.
It's same if you're playing Monopoly, Scrabble,
doesn't
cards.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We have competition with my sons and doing stuff. Yeah, every time you're playing a game, a board game, whatever, I want to win. I'm not going out there just to do it not to win. I'm not happy when I don't win. I mean, I can appreciate if somebody else beats me and give them credit for what they did, but I'm trying to beat them, so they should be trying to beat me.
Fair enough. What strikes you on a weekend like this, being back in an NBA venue? Is it about the people you're getting to reconnect with? Are you interested just to see the game itself?
It's not a game anymore, okay? Let's just get that straight, okay?
Well, that's true.
It's a demonstration. It's not even a demonstration. It's more of entertainment. They're going out there to put on a show for the people. It's no longer a game. They need to take all the records and put asterisks next to them, because they mean nothing. Back when we did, it was a competitive game that everybody played as hard as they could play. I wish it was the same way now, but I understand they have a lot of money on the line and invested in these guys, and they don't want to maybe take a chance of something happening to them. But I'm hoping that the Rising Stars game, we can get these kids. I'm one of the honorary coaches that I don't know what the coaches are going to do, but it would be nice if those guys at least would go out and play it competitively.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, when you get to be an all-star, then you go out, put on a show, and do stuff. But to go out and do the same thing that the NBA does in this game, it would be a major disappointment to me tonight if they can't get these guys to go out and play seriously. It's a way to show what you can do to the people and hopefully get a chance where you can become an actual all-star player, all-star caliber player. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's seeing people. I, you know, just before I came in, I ran into Dominique, you know, and I, you know, love Dominique, seeing Elvin Hayes and so many of the other guys that I had great respect for, played against or watched play. That's probably the most important thing for me, because it's not about the game.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most fun things and one of the most popular things now is what's hard. When I was on the board of Retired Players Association for many, many years, is the luncheon on Sunday. It's, you know, people just love that, to go be around and be around the legends, and that's become one of the most popular events, I think, yes, of All-Star Weekend.
It's a hot ticket.
Yeah, and then, of course, it's nice, the slam dunk, you know, so-so. I mean, here and here, I mean, how many different dunks can you do? Some guys have done some creative things, and that's nice. I'm not a big fan of the skills competition. It all comes down to the last shot.
Yeah.
Determines everything. They need to come up with a better format. The most enjoyable thing for me is three-point shootout, because that's something that's a skill, and if you shoot it better, you're going to win. So that's the one that I enjoy more than anything else.
It is the most consistent one. It is the one that you can count on no matter what year, no matter who's in the event. That one's going to be fun and entertaining.
Well, and it's going to be the person that actually shoots the ball best.
Yeah.
You know, pretty simple, straightforward.
Pretty
skill
straightforward.
Shooting. I mean, the other one is not. You can miss all the other passes, take extra passes and stuff, still go back, and the guy doesn't make that last shot, and you get a chance to knock it in. So, anyway, whatever it may be, that's fine.
They have tried to fix or improve the All-Star game a couple times, the Elam ending and, you know,
here's the thing. Just be honest and say what it is. It's a chance to go out and be entertained with these guys doing incredible things, having a great time, throwing up these crazy shots, doing these amazing things to do. And then you hope, if you're a fan of the game and you really want to see something competitive, hope that the game's close in the last 6 minutes and they'll get serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that there's anything else to fix it. It's the incentive structure is not there, and I'm not sure how they fix
it. I'll tell you, the incentive was, when I played, hell, it was like, I think, $3,000 to the winning team. That's a fifth of my salary. Hell, you can bet your ass I was going to play hard. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, now it's not. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's you go to be entertained.
Yeah, fair enough.
Not to see a legitimate, hard-fought, competitive game. That's not what it is, and it will never be that again, I don't think.
I agree. I think that's probably gone.
Mean it's not fun.
Sure.
I mean, hell, I still remember the couple of All-Stars game when Steph Curry made a freaking bounce pass that he threw from almost half court that went up on the other side, and I think it might have been Giannis or somebody who caught it and made a dunk on the play. Mm. I mean, my God. I mean, that's like incredible play. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, seeing stuff like that and the crazy things these guys do, that's entertaining.
We just had a really active trade deadline, and highlighted, of course, by that Nets-Sixers trade where you had two players who were both stars who are unhappy in their current situations, basically forcing trades. What do you think of this trend that's kind of emerged of guys basically saying, you know what, I'm done, and not waiting for free agency, get me out of here now?
Well, it's like Wilt Chamberlain, who I got to know after I retired and really liked Wilt a lot. His last book I think he did was called The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. And that's what's happened to the NBA. Way, way too much power given to the players. They're employees. They're an employee. I mean, how does a player say, I'm not going to do this? Fire him. Go find a job someplace else.
Not sure that's possible, but...
Well, of course it's possible. I mean, if you're not doing what you're told to do, if you're working for a team and you're told that you have to do something, just the same way. If Ben Simmons, for instance, if the team decided, look, you need to go and learn and shoot underhanded free throws. We're paying you $33 million, and he's going to say, no, I don't want to do that. Well, then fine. Then we're not going to pay you because you're not honoring your contract. You are our employee. We're telling you this is what your job responsibly is. You need to shoot free throws underhanded. I'm using my thing because nobody wants to do it. But or go out and shoot and learn how to become a better shooter and take private lessons and do this. And a player can say, no, I'm not going to do that. Okay, or no, I don't want to play for you guys anymore. Okay, fine, then we don't want to pay you.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, and just, you know, let him go. You know, have some guts. I mean, he's not helping your team. He's hurting your team more than anything, destroying the chemistry of it. Mm-hmm. So let him go. Because if he can't do it for you, he's not going to do it for them. So let them have the problem.
Yeah.
It's not difficult.
Yeah. I think the flip side of it would be just, you know, obviously these guys, they are the stars of the game. They are the reason we go and watch, and people spend a lot of money to see them. They've earned a certain amount of of that power.
Nobody's paying money to go and watch Ben Simmons not shoot and shoot 32% from the free throw line, okay? And so, and I saw him play in college, played against my son Canyon when he was at College of Charleston. I said when I first saw him there, I said, my God, if this guy learns how to shoot the ball and becomes a good shooter, he's going to be a huge factor. He'll be a great player. Why in the world he wouldn't want to try anything within reason to try to become better at doing that, to take his game to a new level, to give his team a chance to win a championship, to make himself a better player contributing to that championship and success, why would you not do that? I just don't understand that's the case, because I love greatness, and I hate to see greatness wasted. This kid could be a great player.
Yeah.
But he has such a flaw with his shot and not willing to even shoot easy shots and not willing to be a better free throw shooter. He becomes a liability to his team. I just don't understand the mentality behind it, or who's guiding him, who's giving him advice about stuff. This is just not good. It's not good personally. It's not good team-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm nothing against, you know, Ben. I think he should be a great player. I mean, I'd love to coach him, teach him how to go ahead and do those things. Can you imagine Ben Simmons being an 80% free throw shooter and being able to shoot the ball well, and he's playing point guard?
Yeah.
He can take any point guard guiding him, almost any guy in the league, and go down and just destroy him in the post.
Yes.
And pass out of it to other people for threes. It would be a joke.
Yeah.
But you can't do it.
Yeah.
Because he's a liability. Sad.
Last thing before I get you out of here. Part of the weekend, too, of course, is celebration of the anniversary, the 75th anniversary team, of which you are, of course, a member. Who'd we miss? Who'd we miss on that? Anybody we should have made?
I wouldn't even get into that. It's so subjective. I mean, other people talk. My wife and I talk about it. Well, should you even have guys who are still current on it?
Yeah.
Young guys in the league. I mean, have they made their mark, or are they just a flash in the pan and they're going to be done and they're not going to play well after this?
Yeah.
The easiest way to do it for me is just do it in decades. You know, take guys in their decades and you take the best players from the various decades and say, okay, he was on this team, that team. But when you start getting into this, you got a lot of guys who are still playing now who are part of the 75th anniversary team. And, you know, not that they don't belong there, but there are others that people think should be on there. So, again, it becomes subjective. You know, what are the criteria? The criteria is what somebody personally thinks about who's voting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how much validity is there to that? I mean, certainly some guys were probably slighted. And some guys, you know, are on there that maybe shouldn't have been on there. You know,
was there anybody you wanted to see on there?
Attention to
it.
It's not for me to worry about doing. I just, you know, I just played the game and let the other people talk about it, because a lot of them don't really, I don't think a lot of people really understand what it takes to be a great player and what skills you need to have. I mean, they just look to scoring. I mean, there's so much more to the game than scoring points. I mean, I scored a lot of points. Take enough shots, you can score points. I mean, it's, how did you play the game? How did you understand the game? I mean, I didn't even know what these scouts look at sometime. I mean, they just get so hung up on athleticism these days. And I'll tell you, I'll give you 12 athletes, 15 athletes. Let me pick 15 guys that know how to play.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are going to be athletes, but a lot of guys that know how to play aren't necessarily great athletes.
Yeah.
But I'd rather have that guy than sometime an athlete who doesn't know how to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Rick Barry, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Bob Pettit, Elvin Hayes, and Rick Barry. Thanks to Julio Mantega and the Retired Players Association. Thanks as always to our producer, Shelby Royston, and thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.